interrupting the current neo-Euchronial, climate change, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting, episode BTWRLM 551. To touchly quickly, thank you very much for stepping up and helping us get the website back from the admin site. Still have to do have to get an access for an archive, which is coincidentally destroyed as well. Hopefully it hasn't affected too much on the website. We'll see. But again, thank you very much for just stepping up and helping us find someone who could get access. And we'll try not to do that again, I hope. Moving on. The FDA warns consumers to stop using several eye drop products due to infection risk. This is a story I've been talking about for a little bit, but it started in India. And I said, let's watch out, because we found out 80% of our medicines may come from India. The Food and Drug Administration on Friday issued the alert for 26 products from the following brands: CVS Health, Leader, Cardinal Health, Rugby, Cardinal Health, Rite Aid, Target Up and Up, and Velocity Pharma. It's the FDA's latest statements in a series of warnings against using eye drops products linked to potential contamination. 2 months ago, the FDA urged the consumers to stop using two eye drop products due to bacterial and fungal contamination. You think they'd have this figured out, folks? Remember, this is like your jabs, too. No one pays attention, it seems, anymore. At least we can say the FDA is looking at this a bit. But we saw it coming in the news, so we didn't have to wait for the FDA. In February, the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention reported an outbreak of Pseudomonas aeruginosa tied to the contamination of other brands of artificial tears and eye drops. The drug-resistant bacteria strain was found in 81 people, four of whom had died from infections, the CDC said in May. So I warned about these from India coming, astonishingly, I didn't know until we read it. A lot of the medicine that comes in the United States is from India, and we always have to worry about wondering what their checks and balances are, the quality control is. And I cited again in this larger recall, which would indicate the industry-wide failure that cannot be trusted. It's kind of stepped out of beyond India as well. So this is a consistent methodology. We'll keep reading here. Over 10 different brands were linked to the infections, the most common being Esri Care Artificial Tears from an Indian-based Global Pharma Healthcare. The FDA said Global Pharma's microbial testing of its eye product was inadequate and that the pharmaceutical provider failed to use adequate tamper-resistant packaging and distributed the drugs without proper preservatives. Yes, U.S. companies are not accepted here, folks. We're not exceptional either. Manufacturers are not exceptional. The marketeers are not exceptional. The government is unexceptional at warp speed. So be careful out there. You might want to really look closer at how you take care of yourself. In a way, I see this stuff coming from a place when we had a higher ethic, I think, and just watching all this being destroyed around us. So we can, again, notice in the news what's going on. And another threat to our safety as I move through here. And we've got lots of more things to talk about, which is coming from all over the place. We only get to so much, not even the tip of the iceberg, maybe a shred of ice crystal of all that's going on that we could take a look at. And then I can only barely touch it here as well. Lawmakers unveil the first bill to renew controversial surveillance program. A key group of bipartisan lawmakers Tuesday introduced their blueprint for renewing a controversial surveillance tool before it expires at the end of the year. What we're watching, Congress has just 7 weeks to push either the new bill or another piece of legislation through to reauthorize the FISA Section 702. However, with the looming government shutdown and funding authorization bills dominating Capitol Hill deliberations right now, it's difficult to see how lawmakers will make time to focus on this issue. So this, folks, as I look at this, this is, again, I don't necessarily talk to the politics. I'm looking to stop this crime against us that comes under color of good government. It's not. And all of the stuff I talk about is how you perceive what might be going on to start up before it gets to you and start taking measures against to avoid it, not have it just pass you by, or how to prepare your mind to get ready to deal with it. Because I did much more in-depth in Covey Swindle. Anybody of you who did that review of the law, you had an arsenal to go against anybody who tried to come at you. And interestingly, you would have looked at that and said, oh, that was just a waste of time. But they didn't come at you because they didn't come at you. But I'm going to tell you, there's an interesting little dynamic in the world. When you're prepared, they won't come at you. Somehow, they know to stay away. And that's just one of those things. You got to just have the faith that you do. And either you're prepared or they don't come at you because they just know how you're talking or how you respond or what you do. That you might not be part of the herd they're expecting to send to slaughter. So this question, this looming government shutdown, we don't want FICA Section of 702 to continue. This is all part of what happened in 9/11. All part of the lockdown of the United States of America, and then turn around the world and call them a terrorist. And then they turn back at us and say, we're the terrorists. No one got a clue about that. But it seems like when there's a lot of other things that may be dominating Capitol Hill's deliberations here, it seems to be an opening to convince these Congress critters to forego FISA altogether. Go ahead and say, yeah, you got too much to do. We don't need that in it. It's not needed. Those of you that will and can, and we used to do this a lot, when I first started broadcasting, we'd find an issue and have thousands of listeners contact, burn the phones up in Capitol Hill or write the letters and send them out and make a big, big issue. And it seemed that there was effect. It's hard to see, but there was effect in doing that. They're surprised when a whole lot of people come in, especially not form letter, give their piece of their mind and tell them that they're, what they're thinking to do or what they might think to do needs to go in a certain way, and what your feeling is. In a way, they do represent you. To me, lately, it's more like a threat, though. You've got to show them, without threatening them, you show them that you're on point and you have what you say has weight. And it can be influential, and it could be determinant of their future in that office. As you then start working to build more of the dereliction that they should be doing, as you pull your cases together, your stuff together, objectively, without question again. No questions here. So that they're in a deliberatory type problem, and I think this might be a good way to just warn them off of 702. We don't need it. The abuse of the agents, come with your list, but just a quick off the top of my head, the abuse of the agents of government commit under its color here, and the fraud of the warrant process resorted to in an unaccountable arena, make it something that requires a whole lot more thought, or just get rid of it. It would be the best and quickest thing. While the Congress critters, you would actually not call them Congress critters, but while they have apparently more important things to do, make your call, do it en masse. Just go ahead and this is what pulling together people together and doing what you can, make a noise about this. If you care about restoring some modicum of the freedom from oppression and due process that they're imposing. Again, the reason why it's not good on the warrant side, they claim that there's a warrant side to this and they have to get a warrant, but it's just a rubber stamp. So just get rid of it. Identify how it's not good, maybe even in your own state, for the representative you're calling in the area that they've been voted in, and make a case, make your book report from school on how this thing should just don't waste their time with it. We've seen enough. And it's time to move on and make the country a better place. And they can be instrumental in doing that, I suppose, but tell them that anyway. Yeah, but FISA, here we're moving on as well, has nothing to do with the mobile, the digital panopticon that's just been given a license. As we can read here, the court rules automakers can record and intercept owner text messages. Now, FISA was the ability for the FBI, the law enforcement, to make up all kinds of stuff to look at you as somebody that they want to look at in a penal way to come after you. And what happened and what came through that 702 was a big net was cast for the foreigners, and they happened to get you all. And that seemed to be okay. So you should show that that's not okay. But here, right inside your own country, court rules automakers can record and intercept owner text messages. a federal judge on Tuesday refused to bring back a class action lawsuit alleging four automaker manufacturers had violated Washington State's privacy law by using vehicles' onboard infotainment systems to record and intercept customers' private text messages and mobile phone logs. The plaintiffs in the four live cases have had appealed in the prior judge's dismissal, but the appellate judge ruled Tuesday that the interception and recording of mobile phone activity did not meet the Washington Privacy Act standard that a plaintiff must prove that, quote, his or her business, his or her person, or his or her reputation had been threatened. An Annapolis, Maryland-based company, Birla Corporation, provides the technology to some car manufacturers, but does not offer it to the general public, the lawsuit said. Once messages are downloaded, Birla software makes it impossible for vehicle owners to access their communications and call logs, but does provide law enforcement with access. It is not much different than an in-state motor vehicle Section 702 FISA. If you listen to me for any length of time, you realize that that's a particular status, the so-called driver, the operator of a motor vehicle, is a status, it's a commercial status. The federal government has regulatory power against the states over commercial regulation. And you're not who you think you are. You don't have a private, they keep calling private message. It isn't private, you see here. Your communications are business, and they're addressable as regulation. And then someone went in from a state and didn't actually read closely what their protections were. And they didn't write their complaint quite right. And then they did not fortify it with facts that would say that they were threatened. And so if you look very carefully, you watch some of this legislation is written, so you can't get at the thing you actually need to stop. And I've told you this about this a long time ago and how this works out. It looks like it's something you want to do. It's like legalizing marijuana. So don't legalize it. Just stop criminalizing it. If it's not criminalized, there's nothing to worry about. No, they went and legalized it. That's licensing. That's control by the state. And that's control by the state for whomever the lobbyists were that wrote that legislation to benefit them. And so this is an ongoing Achilles heel for the American public. Many car manufacturers are selling car owners' data to advertisers as a revenue-boosting tactic, according to earlier reporting of the Recorded Future News. Automakers are exponentially increasing the number of sensors they place in their cars every year with little regulation or practice. Did you catch that? Their cars? You buy it? It's like you're leasing the car from them. In fact, a lot of times you are. You don't own a thing and you're liking it, apparently, because they're going to get you to go down the road and there's not much you can do about, well, you don't have privacy. You think you do. And then you give that up in your mind. Psychologically, you give that up. And the rest of your rights fail as well. Moving on through this commerce connection, the economy, why it's always so important. The power that comes through that whole thing. When you look at the documentation of the organic establishment of the United States before it became established, you see it was a commerce connection through a peace treaty. Peace treaties are not to stop for peace. They are really the agreement, the cessation of war, an agreement to do something. And there are two parties typically in those agreements, and one is a superior party. And the United States, in its peace agreement, peace treaty, was not. That'll blow people away, usually, if they don't read the documents. And so you're going to watch this whole nation be a commerce power, why Congress has the power to regulate. Moving on into this economy, fiscal, monetary, U.S. Treasury Department intercepted payment for, quote, Police State, the name of the documentary, Police State documentary ad campaign. The revelation of the agency involved was even more shocking, the very same department that tracks terrorism and narcotics trafficking. The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network of the United States Department of Treasury had abruptly, quote, intercepted a $106,000 payment intended to purchase ads for D'Souza's film, as he told Newsweek. On the latest concerning OFAC actions, D'Souza expresses his surprise at the censorship act against Police State. Quote, is this some kind of a bureaucratic police state tactic to tie up our funds without explanation? I hope that was a rhetorical question that he's asking. I hope he's a little bit more aware than that, even though his, I understand that documentary is pretty good. That defines, their action defines his documentary title. You live in an open-air prison. It's a commerce prison as well. You deal with a fiat of the warden. It controls your actions, even the freedom to speak or express. So what's your rights worth? And the other thing is, people don't realize you can have a constitution, but it's not in function. You're an administrative side of that. The story has a happier ending, however. The seized funds were returned to D'Souza by late afternoon. Still, the shockwave of this seemingly arbitrary act of alleged retaliation remains, echoing eerily like a scene straight out of the film itself. I'm saying it's film. That's the definition, what they do. And I have a question. Is it a happier story? Well, maybe. That his fiat was returned to him, when you read. What about the ads he wanted to buy to promote his free expression? If his money's returned, apparently the ads didn't get paid. So he still interfered with it. It's not unfettered free speech, even though it was lawful speech. Again, this is just a notice to us. Where do you think you live? How do you think you live? Don't make a joke about it. Don't shrug your shoulders. This is determinant of what our, where our future is going if we continue, really continue to let it go. We can continue to look even outside the United States. It's almost becoming more freedom-oriented than the United States is, at least in initial practice. And then, as I say, the complaint I have is, if your rights are to be recognized up front and presumed, why are we having to go to court to fight for them? Shows you a different thing. And so, and what are you going to do? What's the forum? And a lot of people will just give up because you're going to the occupier. And I've explained, that's true. But you can embarrass that occupier. And I think when enough people are starting to embarrass that occupier, they start getting the idea that the people are starting to get fed up. And that's their worst nightmare, is that the people finally understand what's going on and start to take quality measures to counter it or end it. So we're going to look off the shore now, and thank goodness for a Finnish court. We'll let people express their biblical ideas. If there is a presumptive arrest by the occupying police state, Finnish court sides with parliamentary charged with a parliamentarian charged with hate speech, in quotes, for Bible quote tweets. And also, you see this Twitter becoming a net of capture as well. But the court weighs in, and you're going to listen for how they weigh in, and you're going to see it's the same thing that's going on about being anti-Semite, being declared by some ADL that you're an anti-Semite, and they don't even know what the word means when you understand what it means. Like in the case of Palestinians, you want to protect them. They're the Semites. The Zionist Federation that was installed by Britain in the Palestine is not a Semite. The Jews may be. And you start looking at all the players here and who they are, whether they're real or not, whether they're a facade. And you can start to parse this pretty quickly. And you're going to see here, there's a distinction between being able to make quotes and speak your mind, and then, or blaming somebody for that. And this court gives us another clue. If we're not hearing it from our courts in the United States, we're going to have to look around and find it out there. Again, this is an integrated world. International law works all the time. And I want to remind you, international law is merely international norms of how the nations interact in their international areas. And so it's not like law, really. And so, as I've said before, however, the United States Supreme Court, as I said last week, I think it was Kansas versus Colorado 1907, they say that. They say that international law plays always. Always, always, always. Across the United States. You have to kind of know that. And if you don't, you miss it. You miss something. You're going to be missing quite a bit, actually, in how some of this works. And because we miss, and I say we now, I don't get it all, but without that primer about how that works, you don't really understand how the courts are sometimes working. And so we'll go in there thinking we know a lot, and they'll tell us, we won't listen, but we think we know so much. They'll tell us what they're even limited to, and we'll think we know more. I learned a long time ago, you don't want to do that. And I'm urging people, that's why I say learn a lot, read a lot, figure it out. maybe listen behind the woodshed more than a few seconds and start putting two and two and two and two times two, and a couple more 2 hours behind that, and maybe start pulling together what I'm talking about, why I'm talking about it, and what I'm really trying to get to. We aren't even close. I told everybody a long time ago, we may not ever get where I really want to speak to. Because it's right now there's no foundation in people that would allow me to speak to it. And it's a sad thing to see. There's nothing I can do about that. I can encourage people to read, integrate with other people, ask questions on point with your studies if you still have questions. Be directed and accept that to go do more research. You have to have a ton of reading under you. And the people I know that do a lot of reading, I have a lot less trouble with what they're saying. They're not, in my view, my opinion, they're not quite there, but there's a few coming along. There's a few, a handful, that are maybe to the point where we don't have to keep talking about this fundamental stuff. We can start to get to the nuts and bolts. I'm hoping that happens soon, but we will see. Here we are still fighting in the world over someone just quoting the Bible on Twitter. The court upheld the unanimous decision in March 2022, acquittal and secured in district court, rebuffing the prosecutor's arguments. The court concluded that based on the presented evidence, there was no grounds to deviate from the district court's ruling. The prosecution was ordered to cover the hefty legal expenses of both defendants. They have until 15 of January 2024 to appeal the ruling to the Supreme Court. Rawson Nen's legal defense, coordinated by ADF International, underscored the robust defense of free speech in international and Finnish law. It submitted that her use of the word sin, which the prosecutor deemed as offensive and unlawful, was a direct quotation from the Bible. Thus, condemning its usage was a direct condemnation of the Bible. The appeals court, upheld the district court's judgment unaltered, recognizing a requirement for an overriding societal need to intrude upon and limit freedom of expression. The district court had concluded that it was not in its responsibility to decipher political ideas. So you got to really look careful at parse that through and really understand when someone's coming at you. This happens to be biblical speech, if you will, but quoting out of the Bible. That, by a prosecutor who is a member of the global bar, if you will, finds offense to that. The court, who is also a member of the bar, looked and said, well, the people are looking on. We got to at least go by some objective basis here. So it sounded like the judges were fairly embarrassed to move any further than what they had, that you can speak, and you can speak in a way that's not hateful. In other words, you can talk about the Zionists and not talk about the Jews, and they want to commingle them. And so when you can start to parse this through, there's courts in the world that recognize these distinctions. You have to know the distinctions in order to get through it. This is just speech. This is the same kind of distinctions, you can call them framing a condition, that I see in all subject matters. And the so-called prosecutor here, he's a persecutor at this point, but the prosecutors will come and misframe something to catch you up. And that's what you're looking to avoid. And if you have you're looking at it properly and in time, you'll be able to do that pretty well. Again, I've used the news as a notice to explain to us how, and then Kobe Swindle, to go directly at them and put the burden immediately upon them. So your free speech, even talking about the Bible, is no good anymore in the world. Well, until you see, you got to go fight for your rights. You can't be silent. Then you got to do it properly. Yeah, I don't like all that. And you got to be persistent, and you may still lose. But I think that's because there's only a few people swinging for the fences in the proper way. In fact, where I was in a discussion, I can tell, let's say if you're a defendant, I can tell pretty quickly whether or not you're actually doing your rights. I can just listen to your words right there in the beginning, your initial court case. And if you don't have an idea of that, then you're not understanding how we're being defeated as the people. And yeah, we shouldn't have to be looking at that, but we are because we're an occupied people. We're no longer in control. And we pretend that we want to be in control, but we really don't take control. And until we get our mind wrapped around all that, I think it just continues and goes down and really gets worse. I mean, we're watching all kinds of news today. The United States is an embarrassment in the world right now. I'll move on to what I had on my tabs. New data shatters legacy media narrative that Rumble is a right-wing echo chamber, despite media claims. Free speech doesn't create echo chambers, but free speech was allowed to manifest that Rumble was a right-wing echo chamber. If you watch the dynamic with this, reading on, the truth is that the big tech echo chambers fueled the demand for alternative platforms such as Rumble, which allows users to speak freely. But new data from ComScore has shattered this media narrative and revealed that Democrats are the leading political audience of Rumble among 18-plus years old in the U.S. The video sharing platform also has more unique visitors from independents than Republicans among Americans age 18 and over. And so I guess we can look at this and say, okay, we can be told a lot, but are we doing the study to find out one way or the other? One of the things we look in behind Rumble, and I don't know much about it, more than it's there, and I think, well, Sound Minds goes there. We suspect Sky for broadcasting. Lots of people broadcast out of it. And maybe why there's not much following. We see Democrats come. If our message is more conservative, I guess maybe they won't show up. But anyway, this is an interesting thing that goes on with these websites. But if you look at Rumble, if I understand this all correctly, the problem with Rumble is Comrade Thiel being recently exposed as an FBI informant. Thiel is like the billionaire dude, and he's in partnership with the Congress creator Vance. They're the ones they're using this as a business cover to move this forward. So when you look at what they're doing there, I wonder if that poll was paid for with a wink and a nod to try and show that for Rumble. I don't know. With all the skullduggery going on, who knows what is what anymore? And unless you're on the inside to know, like the whistleblowers help us to see, we really don't know how this is all going. And so what about that freedom of expression, free from the scrutiny of government operatives? If Thiel, the owner, is an FBI informant, we don't know what he's informing on. It maybe makes sense why he's got a lot of money. It seems like lots of people that work with the government seem to have a lot of money for some reason. They figured it out. Okay, I'm jealous a little bit, but not actually. Effectively, I walk from a lot of that stuff, but neither here nor there. We really have to be careful. There might be a poll out there that says, oh, it's not right wing, and it might say, oh, it's more neutral. In fact, it's going the other way, but is the platform a really viable anyway? And I don't know. I'm not making that decision. I'm saying we really have to start looking at things. It's partly why I've said, do your own independent technology. Become that web 3, 4, or 5, whatever it is. Utilize the space of the dark web and make it bring some light to it. But you do that mutually. And so that's another thing I'm revisiting here, maybe working on where these things are being controlled. These places like Rumble, where the polls come out to try and shift thought. You know, that's a programming of people as well. I don't know what they're in it for business. They're in it for profit. So I don't know what the angle is for all that. But it ends up being ultimately not good for, if you will, the truth, trying to get the information out. And a lot of these places, they have so much information, it's overwhelming. That was one of the problems that they looked at in the Internet. It's so much information. And this was before it was going to be misinformation, even from the government. But apparently, the occupier also, and he's speaking the truth and freedom and expression, the occupier here has no sense of humor, if that's how one intends to express oneself in this report here, notice to us. Officials warn of booty patrol truck, they say, is impersonating a border patrol vehicle. Photos of the truck show the truck bed with the words booty patrol on it, and the doors are decorated with a decal that mimics a law enforcement seal and the words, quote, National Booty Behavioral Protection. So, this was in Florida. I wanted to know what border are they patrolling in Florida with this truck. But neither here nor there, just interesting things, because what I'm looking at is, where does your right to free speech happen, and when you don't intend, what's the presumption here? Would the sheriff here, instead of booty patrol, would he have been as concerned if the truck sign said beach patrol? Because that's a border, too. But no, we were talking about this truck. in Florida. The sheriff's office is looking for the owner of the vehicle and is warning community members to not pull over for the truck. Now, if this rig is never used to impersonate more than mimic for the purpose of pun or free expression, in other words, there was no intention to deceive or impersonate, and never attempts to detain anyone or interfere under color of authority. And the report claims no such interference, if you look and read it. If there is none of this going on, what's the authority of the government to be concerned? So we're back to looking at the open-air prison warden presumes impersonation with no facts in the story to support it. So much for your right to freedom of expression, it seems to me. And we all understand, oh, the sheriff is the law enforcement officer. Well, is it really law he's enforcing at this point? I'm not so sure. I didn't get it from the story. So the power of presumption, his presumption that's wrong, is a lie. Now, if I saw a truck go down there and it said Booty Patrol and it had a big green stripe, we think it looks like Border Patrol, I wouldn't take offense to that. I think it'd be kind of funny. It wouldn't be what I want to convey, but, I mean, that's someone's idea, the expression, some turn of a phrase for what they think is going on. But it's presumed to be a problem. Again, what's the problem when you're not actually impersonating? Well, there's no evidence that truck has ever pulled anybody over, even though the sheriff says don't pull over for them. Anyway, so this is where we see the missing parts, and I had to think we're in a commerce company, actually. They must have a trademark and a copyright on the look of that truck in order to go after it. This is almost like a trademark claim. But here we have moving on into what I've suggested about the cops and to limit some of this nonsensical stuff. New first in the nation, it claims here, new first in the nation, policy limits Seattle police from knowingly lying. So if the presumption I just went from the sheriff in Florida was really incorrect, there is no evidence that they were intending to impersonate. They were just doing a joke, a pun on the image. That's a form of lying. Well, you have to make a law, a policy against it, and we see it first in the nation, as I've been telling you for a decade or so. You're going to have to walk in. When you see these police forces that are doing no good, you got to go after their policy, and you got to get it changed so that they don't commit the crime against you eventually. First in the nation, we'll see. City is instituting a new policy limiting the Seattle Police Department's ability to use ruses in their work, citing recent instances where the public's trust was undermined by officers knowingly using untrue statements. According to the new policy, police will not be able to use a statement an officer knows is not true over any mass media or in any way that will shock the conscience. The policy also requires officers to get permission before using any ruses, along with other use guidelines. The Office of Inspector General of Public Safety and City Council member Lisa Herbold pushed for the policy change after incidents in 2018 and 2020 when a ruse may have contributed to a suicide and a ruse incited chaos during the George Floyd protest. Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell announced the policy change October 30th, emphasizing the public trust lost during the use of these ruses outweighs any benefits gained by officers. You're getting the notice here, right, folks? It's not news. They're telling you something. What I tell you here. Quote, he read, so it goes on and says, effective public safety requires community buy-in, and this new policy is an important step to build understanding with the public, demonstrating that for SPD operations to be successful, they must be paired with a commitment to unbiased constitutional policing. Harrell said in a statement, this innovative new policy will lead to better police work thanks to the voices of many, including the media, who brought attention to the tactic, community members who called for guidelines to match our values, and Seattle accountability, and police leaders who developed a plan to make that vision real. And so we look at that story and we say, oh, the truth is a constitutional thing. Wow, who'd have thunk it? Reading on a little bit more here, according to the Seattle Police Chief Adrian Diaz, the policy is the first of its kind in the United States and continues SPD's, quote, long tradition of public safety innovation rooted in accountability and the commitment to building public confidence. So you're watching them tell you that they have to maintain your trust, they have to maintain your confidence. The fact that they have to do that is a problem. But innovative as well. You'll see Seattle. Remember Nikki Rapana. She comes from there before she moved into Alaska. She cut her teeth in Seattle against the New World agents and over change agents. And you heard all the sustainable words in that police department that she would have told you, was showing you there's another type of government running in there. But they understand the international law that says the natives can't get restless and we can't put too much light on the things that will make the natives restless. But this is innovative? Why would this be innovative? So, as I said, go back to your local police policies and objectively state the limits of police action there so they don't get out of hand because they're not going to train themselves. The occupier will do as much as it can get away with. Showing, again, the nature of the occupation. If maintaining your trust hasn't been a clue, insisting on truth from a law enforcement agency is innovative. Who'd have thunk it, folks? I'm amazed at what I'm reading in these stories anymore. If you start to break this down, they're telling you what's going on, and it's not what anybody thought. And yet you can affect it. You can't affect it by being quiet, and you can't affect it by just making noise either. Oh, the voices and the press, what I've been telling you about the press, become that press, become that the witness. Don't be stupid. But become that witness. Have high integrity about that as well, for those of you that it appeals to. Don't put yourself in jeopardy. There's a way to do it without it. So I'm going to put that caution and caveat. But isn't that fascinating what you hear here? We've got to build public confidence. They can't let it go away. That's international law, folks. You would think that you were in a government that would maintain that just because it functions right. No, you got to make special policies so that everybody gets the idea that you at least got to try. And this is the limit of your government. That's the limited government. If it's not limited, it's going to be unlimited. And we're watching. If you don't limit it by the law, you watch Kobe Swindle. Blew up 80% of the people in the world. The world, folks. No distinction between any country in America. Pretty scary, actually. The right to repair now. In the news, here we have coming along, you've got to make a law. If you thought you had a right, you have to make a law anymore. And if you don't, you probably won't. Right to repair in the news and the laws needing to be enacted for things you thought were natural to a free society. Well, it ends up being a free government, not you, not your friends. The government becomes free where it's not limited. Voters overwhelmingly passed car right to repair law in Maine. I've talked a little bit about this right to repair. Again, I can't get too deep into it. There's other people on the internet that talk a lot about it, a lot better than I will or spend the time to. I'm astonished that we have to ask for a right to repair our own stuff. Maybe the technology is beyond us, but that's not the point. Then you find out, again, the companies are restricting your access because it's profitable to them. It has nothing really to do with the function of, let's say, the car. The manufacturer just wants your text so they can give it to some revenue-raising advertisement. As they track you wherever you want, wherever you go, you plug onto something and all of a sudden they know what to offer you because you've been talking about it. Boy, how insidious is that, the privacy? Privacy interjection, and then you find out it's really not private. That's why you don't have an action. But voters in Maine overwhelmingly passed a ballot measure Tuesday that enshrines the right to repair cars, a major win for consumers and a blow to auto manufacturers who have spent millions lobbying against similar legislation and fighting against it in the courts. Again, someone had to step up to do the initiative, to write the ballot, to get it in the election, and then get it passed. If you don't, the corporations and their lobbyists win. It's just the way it works. I don't like it. I don't like to tell you that, but that's the way it is. I'm shocked that it's that way. I thought people walked into this stuff and were reasonable, and they're not. And then we see how does someone who's broke going into being a Congress creator for the first year come out 3 years later, 4 years later, and they're millionaires. That's part of the problem. Offices of profit wasn't supposed to actually mean money. That said, here we go. question four here, which explains to someone now, if you want to try and mimic this, now the sheriff may look at you for mimicking, but mimic it anyway. If you want to do this and you want to get these kinds of laws through that help people, question four on this ballot was, of which enshrines consumers' data access to car diagnostics for the purpose of repair, passed by a margin of 84 to 15.7 in Tuesday's election, with 94% of the votes tallied. The yes-no question was simple. Quote, do you want to require vehicle manufacturers to standardize onboard diagnostic systems and provide remote access to those systems and mechanical data to owners and independent repair facilities? I repeat that word because that's the big deal. They want you going to their dealerships. Anyway, so that was a simple question, and that was what was voted on. And that had to be put in because we don't have these rights unless the government, you know, we the people pass it. So that's real simple, right? So simple to do. Yeah, a little bit of work, but so simple. Instead of complaining and moaning and scratching and gnawing and gnashing, these are the kinds of things that you got to start focusing on. If you get a crew of people that will work, the load becomes a lot less. You understand really more what you're supposed to do. Don't do pie in the sky stuff, and don't stand on your any political party. Go in with what you need. This had nothing to do with either any political party. It has to do with people having the right to do their repairs and being free from being or told who they can go to and how much. And when you got a monopoly, see, that's there's another point here. Underneath that, there's a monopoly. That's usually always not a good thing. I think the only time a monopoly can be considered a better thing is when, let's say, the government takes over a utility. That's a monopoly, but it's tended because it's got public scrutiny. It's, again, corruption can go everywhere, but typically that's the kind of monopoly you're looking for in that regard, where everybody should be treated the same, and there shouldn't be gouging, and there shouldn't be arbitrary and capricious policies that change from day to day. And that's the other thing about a law. It sits there until it's thrown out. It can take a long time for it to go out, as we see decades happening bad laws before they're overturned. Well, make good laws, then they won't be overturned either. But so I wonder here, this was simple, but it's necessary to do on this to counter the assault on your freedom to decide, it seemed to me. I wonder whether the right to repair includes destroying the right of the car maker to steal your data without relief. Tying this into the other one where the court says, no, you can't stop them. This right to repair, could you go in and could you repair that fault and keep the manufacturer from getting that data? I think this might be another way to get at that indirectly. Moving on into this issue here. Senate Democrat to blogger on Amtrak ride, I'm going to have you thrown off this train. Now here we have the press who's trying to get answers, who's trying to be go to the horse's mouth, so to speak. He goes to do that, and he gets a Senate Democrat wants to throw him off the train he's sitting on. Another one of the voters here on this guy might want to look out and repair him out of office, I think. Senate Democrat to blogger on an Amtrak ride. Interesting. I didn't realize they had sequestered Amtrak train cars either, but here we get the notice of that as well. Senator Chris Coons, Democrat DE, I guess he's out of the North, had a tense conversation on Monday with journalist Aaron Mate on an Amtrak train when the lawmaker was repeatedly asked about pushing for a ceasefire in Gaza. The confrontation began when Mate started his video recording of Coons, who was sitting in front of him on the train, and he opened his questioning with an apology about putting the senator on the spot about the views on his support for Israel. Quote, after questioning Senator Coons about his support for Israel massacres in Gaza, I was asked to move to a different seat. I complied. About 30 minutes later, he walked by me. We did not exchange words. At the next stop in Philadelphia, I was the city of brotherly love, I guess. In Philadelphia, I was removed from the train. I assume this was done at Senator Coons' behest, Mate said in a post on social media. Isn't that interesting? He can be removed. He can't ask questions. He's the press. That's supposed to be a representative, the Democrat. and we watch this, and I don't know how many people are going to return on this, but again, the voters have the power to remove the guy from office. These people are public figures. They cannot sequester themselves away unless they got some real big, like, well, we got an emergency going on. We've got a privileged meeting to be at. But this is what we continue to see and allow. And Mate has taken some criticism. He's pigeonholed as being some alternative guy that's a nitwit. I find it interesting, the reaction he gets. And I've used some of his reports and their reports because I think he works with Max Blumenthal, to explain to us the things that we wouldn't know if it wasn't for these guys. So, interesting. He gets thrown off the train. Rode for 30 minutes. Didn't go anywhere, I guess. And maybe the people that need to be booted, the vote, if we were going to do something important, the vote, maybe McCarthy needs to get the boot too. Maybe it's time to bring back dueling. You can figure whether I'm talking about banjos or not. Here, decorum is leaving the building. As I read this story, that's all the thoughts that went through my mind. Ousted U.S. House Speaker accused of assaulting a colleague. Kevin McCarthy faces an ethics complaint after allegedly elbowing a fellow Republican lawmaker in the back on Capitol Hill. Representative Matt Gaetz, the Florida Republican who led the campaign to replace McCarthy as House Speaker, filed an ethics complaint following the alleged assault. Quote, "This Congress has seen a substantial increase in breaches of decorum unlike anything we have seen since the pre-Civil War era," Gaetz wrote in his complaint. Quote, "I myself have been a victim of outrageous conduct on the House floor as well, but nothing like an open and public assault on a member committed by another member. The rot starts at the top." The alleged incident came on the same day that a U.S. senator nearly came to blows with a witness during a committee hearing. Oklahoma Republican Mark Wayne Mullen confronted Teamster President Sean O'Brien about a social media post in which the labor union leader accused the senator of playing a tough guy act and challenged him to a fight any place, any time, cowboy. Quote, "Sir, this is the time, and this is the place if you want to run your mouth," Mullen said. "We can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here." "Okay, that's fine. Perfect. I'd love to do it right now," O'Brien replied. You have to understand, this is in a Senate committee meeting. this theater, this show. Anyway, big time stuff going on. When Mullen stood up and began moving toward O'Brien, Senator Bernie Sanders, the Vermont Independent, who was tasked with chairing the committee, intervened. Quote, "This is a hearing," Sanders said. Quote, "And God knows the American people have had enough contempt for Congress. Let's not make it worse." Can you just let the cat out of the bag, folks? They're paying attention. People are not liking it. Now I want people to actually step up themselves and go, well, maybe not do the insurrection you're going to be blamed for if you do it their way in J6, but go and start to address these folks. Professionally, of course, don't insist on a fight, but the Congress knows they're not doing their job. The Senate knows it's not doing its job. These are little clues. If people would just form up now, we would have the ability to start putting pressure. It's not the only thing we need to do, but it's one of those things. Mullen, a businessman who was sworn in as a senator early this year, fought and won 3 MMA fights in 2006 and 2007. So maybe we're headed in the right direction again here, where honor was settled by a duel. What do you think, folks? Is this the case that MMA guns meet the union boss Big Mouth? This is fascinating. Wow, just I'm pretty impressive. The demeanor, the professionalism. We're watching the decay falling apart in the United States. As we watch, and in that chaos, we have an ability to come back and put pieces back together. Maybe it has to fall completely apart. I don't know, but there's a couple of different thoughts about this. But if you start showing an example, a good example, maybe that example is to stand up against the nonsense of a union boss. But we also have to watch out for, that's all driven by the banker too, and what might be coming up and not. And so we really have to take a circumspect look, but maybe this is the point where watching action needed to be taken. Civil war? Duels? Wow. And there's a penalty for duels in some places. It's just simply that you can't run for office. So if you're never planning to run for office, maybe you're the one that would stand up and demand a duel if you're of equal stature. And apparently that was the equal stature, and there was an honor breach. And the independent, Bernie Sanders, I wonder if he's on Rumble. He intervened. But interesting dynamic, I thought. And McCarthy, attacking, gets a complaint. Is anything going to happen? We can be people on the looking for the right action, not just sitting back hoping our team does it, because it's their team, Uniparty, against us. And this is just infighting at this point. But in this chaos, we can bring changes along, and it could be changes that we need to go back to, like, oh, make it a law that it's a law that it's you can't lie while you're an officer. What's that? It's constitutional, folks. Now, McCarthy was ousted in part for his Ukraine support with the Dems, because he's a Republican, with the Democrats, contrary to the Republicans' intention and their support of Israel. Leaving no Congress critter left behind on this story comes right to light, and we hear Ukraine proxy war and Gaza genocide fatally exposes Western hypocrisy and moral bankruptcy. I've been saying this stuff is in us as people. And what we watch and allow, it might be entertainment, but when we're looking at the world and we're affecting the world, or those folks in the little enclave called Washington, D.C., turn around and affect us, making laws that can shut down your car, making no protection with these industries that are going and using you as the product, and lots of other things. I mean, that's just not even the tip there, but. We are going to see an accelerating decline into that stinking abyss that I keep mentioning and have been mentioning for as long as I've been broadcasting. Western leaders and institutions have brought themselves into unprecedented disrepute over their complicity with the genocide against the Palestinian people. This is all the more amplified by the NATO, NATO, proxy war in Ukraine. Not only is Washington complicity in the war crimes exposed, but also what is on display to the whole world is the shocking double standard and hypocrisy of the Western leaders. These people are liars, psychopaths, and criminals. So as you're seeing these players in these things, consider maybe that's their status and that's what's going on. Just keep that open, that's maybe really what we're watching. And it reflects out. They can't do anything different. Well, if they can't do it different, we're going to have to get rid of that. They have to be encouraged to resign, or you have to get them out. What the crimes are revealing is stark reality is the absolute fiendish nature of the Western state power. The crimes of the Israeli regime are the manifestation of Western imperialism, the true and grotesque putrid nature of Western power. For decades, indeed centuries, the United States and its European partners have conducted a charade of pretending to be paragons of democracy while at the same time exploiting and debauching the rest of the planet. Now, all their deceptions and corruptions are fully on display. These are the criminal regimes whose histories of warmongering, the colonialism and imperialism were all too often obfuscated by preponderant media control and self-appointed allure. It is now crystal clear that the collective West, a global minority elite, really stands for death and destruction. And there's a lot to that statement in that article. You can read more, but I just highlighted that part. And again, this is a reflection from those inside, outwardly, and their actions speak louder than the words. Again, you know them when you see them. You know them by what they do, not what they say. So even if you violate a complaint as a Congress critter, and it goes nowhere, and you don't make a big noise about that, and then push it through, you're just, again, playing your part. And what exudes from this government, and it's not, I'm talking about the United States because I think we need to hold a higher standard than the rest of the world. We have the ability to. We did before. We didn't slip into the stinking abyss and try to drag others in it. And they said, we're not going. And now we're kind of going in on our own. We the people, it's all that you were seeing is representing us is looking bad on us. And we may not have a scruple about that either. I don't know. I hope not. I hope we do, and I hope we get fed up with it. But we want better. But again, this type of demon, this evil that's in us, and where these agents, inside these agencies, under the color of the government, the sovereign, so-called, get licensed to do stuff is horrendous. But here's one for you dog lovers out there. Death and destruction is what that prior author was just pointing out to us in the Western elite. That what death and destruction is all the FBI knows. Federal Bureau of Investigation. Now, understand what you're who you're dealing with. Federal Bureau of Investigation. They trained bomber dogs to blow up Russian positions in the LPR, the Lugansk People's Republic, in Ukraine, now Russia. The NATO, NATO, and FBI instructors trained the dogs to destroy Russia positions, as well as sniff out and blow up mines, an intelligence officer for the Lugansk People's Republic told Sputnik. Earlier, an intelligence service employee of Lugansk forces reported that the unidentified people had tried to destroy documents confirming the cooperation between Ukrainian police and the Federal Bureau of Investigation of the United States in Severodonetsk, which was liberated in the course of the special military operation. Quote, according to the recent reports, there are more frequent cases of dogs being used to blast our Russian positions. There are a lot of reports that mongrel dogs, which are booby-trapped with explosive devices attached to them, run into our positions and explode, the officer clarified. After I got past that horror, what's the FBI doing in Ukraine, folks? It's not the United States. But you see what's happened since 9/11. Oh yeah, I go back there. Go fast. Right back to there. This is what the whole point was around 9/11, is to expand this death and destruction from the United States outward. It doesn't mean that other countries don't. But if we're going to do that, we need to do it a whole lot better. I can just say that. And I think there was time in the history that we did that. But even more so, there was a time, at least my growing up, when you could look and see diplomacy, statesmanship working. It actually worked. And you really had to be good at how you did your thing and got accomplished what you needed to accomplish. So we have the FBI going to Ukraine to train dogs to go blow themselves up. They don't know that. But this is what's the evil, the inside people. Remember, this is a place that they are not going to take back. This is a place where even the United States is fomenting a thing that should have never began, and they're doing it to essentially kill off Ukrainian people. The fodder, the meat grinder. They know the United States, the West, knows they're walking the Ukrainian soldier into them. And it's got a future plan. If you look around, you'll start to see more of that. But when faced with its bullying ways and a moral bankruptcy, we can read, Russia's revelations on Ukraine's biolabs force U.S. to curtail global warfare research. This is a bit encouraging, although, again, all these nations do it. But we've heard over and over again, when you see where the United States puts their labs, they're targeting certain people. This is a different, this is an ethnic cleansing type of study that they're doing. And Russia has been instrumental in digging that up because they went and took over the territory that had these labs and got the documents. Russia's radiological, chemical, and biological defense troops began to shed light on the dramatic extent of the United States military biological activities at dozens of facilities in Ukraine in the spring of 2022, uncovering work on a mind-boggling array of deadly pathogens. Folks, just death and destruction. Many of their findings have since been independently corroborated. The United States was forced to scale back its global military biological programs in the wake of Russia's revelations about their extent. Radiological, chemical, and biological defense troop chief Igor Kirillov has said, the U.S. bioweapons program is very pragmatic and has very specific goals, Kirillov stressed, noting that, quote, the first and most important goal for them is to control the situation, and the second is to make money by displacing competitors. We're going to talk about monopoly here, folks. And sometimes it's good when the government has it. In this case, this is deadly, this monopoly. But it's about money. Here again, the United States is a commerce nation. Owing to somebody else now. in a couple, if you will, if you read. And so to back up that profiteering aspect beyond the military intention, and maybe even if cynically considered dual use, that use for economics, Russia's revelations based on thousands of seized documents also uncovered some of the minutiae of the intricate workings of bureaucratic mechanisms and the U.S. big pharma involvement in funding pathogen research, revealing, for instance, that a biotech company affiliated with the Hunter Biden-linked investment fund has engaged in research into quarantine infections that could damage countries' agriculture. The independent reporting has subsequently confirmed these links based on data found in Biden's infamous lost laptop. Except, folks, Biden's laptop doesn't exist. The FBI and others say so, remember? Very serious denial. I want to drive home this point. The United States government lies, even to its own people, to their irreparable harm, as we have seen at warp speed. Put this together. That's not what we're saying. In Seattle, they're making it a law. The government's not supposed to lie. The officers aren't supposed to lie. We need one for the United States, apparently. And I think it's there. What we don't have is enforcement and accountability. That accountability word that kept coming up in that Seattle story, yeah, you're not going to see that. Only in the most blatant cases. But anyway, neither. The law's already there. It's just not being enforced. Showing you the law's not for them. It's only for you when you step out of line in this open-air prison that we haven't quite recognized yet. And so we don't see the accountability. We don't see the arrest for the high crimes and misdemeanors or treason on all this. And so it's just for what the United States does, the lies that it commits. It's not even upstanding enough, honorable enough to make a law. You don't lie and enforce that, as you notice over and over, and why people shrug their shoulders, because there is no accountability. And I cannot see, if you don't have an accountability, that things like this aren't going to continue. They don't. There's no mediation for it at all. And understand what they did to us at Warp Speed. This is the same scenario. Identical, what they did over there. I told you, you look out there, the news from out there, why I go out there, foreign to the United States, reflects on the United States. If you can't see it here, I want to go out there to show you, look for it, see what's out there, and start looking for the basics of it. And I showed you to explain to you how you cut right through it with this Coby Swindle law. And you had disarmed all of that. The accountability may not have come against the one who didn't do the law, but you would not have been, nobody, 80% of the people that got scared into doing it would not have, if they had just followed that process, whether they were afraid or not, just follow that process, they would have found out there was nothing to fight. But because there's money to be made on it, and you saw tons being made, even the fiat, control, status, the stock market, all that, and to come, now they're going to, now Pfizer's now buying up companies that do medicines to fix what they've caused, as I told you they would. This is just a nice method of making money. You see, Russia has found that's what they do. And they want to get rid of competition. Government hates competition. And another facet here going on, the hypocrisy and moral bankruptcy that we are just apparent. It's not just now, but we every week now, almost every action brings our proof of this thing. Ukrainian accused of Nord Stream bombing denies WAPO's claims. A recent report by the newspaper reinforces the narrative that of a fringe saboteur group acting independently of the leadership in Kiev. Again, this is just a story. It all comes at the right time while other things are going on. Roman Chervinsky, a Ukrainian colonel with the Kiev Special Operations Forces, reportedly managed logistics and support for a six-person sabotage team that supposedly carried out the attack, WAPO alleged on Saturday. Now, the WAPO, the Washington Post, it's a government propaganda machine. So just you just know that. So we put that in perspective already, and we know something's not going to be right. But we can listen from over there what's going on to this. All speculation about my involvement in the attack on Nord Stream are being spread by Russian propaganda without any basis, Chervinsky told the paper, even though it cited official Ukrainian and European sources, as well as other, quote, people knowledgeable about the details of the covert operation. So in this story, when you read it, you might as well replace Russian with American. It's American propaganda trying to keep the focus off the American act of war against a NATO ally for geopolitical and economic advantage. Now, this story about this six-person team is just a story. It doesn't even exist, but they're going to pump it like it is. They're going to try and find a scapegoat for something that didn't even happen. And he gets to turn around and blame it on the Russians. But so we take this story and we just replace every time we see Russia, for the most part, just put American. If it says Russian Nord Stream, you can't put American there because it was Russia's Nord Stream. What I'm saying is the actors. If it's Russia propaganda, no, it's American propaganda, this whole thing. Or, as you noticed, the previous BioLab article pointed out, to make money by displacing competitors. That's the economic thing. You watch exactly that plan work out when that pipeline was destroyed. You watch natural gas being shipped from America over there, and there was that big worry that this last winter they weren't going to have enough. No, big money, expensive gas went over there. That's what it was all about. No, the United States is again covering this up, and we just in time we get to see the right when we need to hear it from a CIA vet. Nord Stream pipeline spin is pushed as a U.S. acutely aware Ukraine can't win. So this is a CIA vet coming out to tell us likely what the truth I think it would be. But the other spin is he's trying to say they're covering that they know that Ukraine can't win. But here's the point. It's not after the fact. They knew that going in. And I've explained that going into this, why that was been for many broadcasts. Washington and some Europeans are becoming acutely aware that the war against Russia cannot be won by Ukraine, even with more open support from NATO. Philip Giraldi, former military intelligence and CIA operations officer with experience in Europe and Middle East, told Sputnik. This explains the timing of the Washington Post's new spin on a Ukrainian colonel's alleged role in the Nord Stream sabotage, the pundit suggested. Okay, let's go beyond suggestion, folks. Let's just watch how this plays out. It's for real. And this is a big bait and switch or psyop or whatever. This is just the story they want to push because it has to cover a lot of things. And most importantly was that the United States committed war against NATO in one of the bigger ones there. But the counteroffensive has been a bloody failure, and the White House is shifting its resources and backing to Israel, which is much more important to policymakers in Washington. Even that might be failing, where the PR campaign by Israel in this thing is just atrocious, and I'm happy to see it, so people don't get confused about which side Israel really is on, and those that support Israel, what side they're on. But we don't need the CIA vet here to see that this is a not spin relative to the original story is fraudulent, a distraction. There is no spin that can be put on fraud. And so this is a very, you start watching these news stories and it's a really interesting movement that's going on that kind of tries to cover up many layers of things that are going on and get us to focus and to be distracted on other points. The bottom line is we have the United States is nothing but death and destruction, and it's done for economy. It's economic. It's money. Just what it was developed for. And we, the people of the United States, kind of missed that little detail. And then we wonder where our rights were. And we wonder why we're treated like commerce entities. I wonder why you continue to tell the government you're a commerce entity. And then there's not enough of people like myself that understand that and understand the defense there or the lack of action to take to admit to that. And then also understand the corruption that's going to beat you down for bringing that out because they don't want the truth, right? They don't want no competition. But you have to do that nevertheless. And there's a study that can be made, and there's things steps you can start to take to start making sure that doesn't happen to you. But you just watch this themes. The United States government is death and destruction for money around the world. That's what it's going to hold on to. And then we got this new element going on relative to Israel. It's an interesting little twist, but nevertheless, the methods are all the same. And here we have the CIA vet in the last story. Now we have another system guy. The state's right in the time of need here, not before, though the evidence has been here long before. Scott Ritter, time of the U.S. to dump Zelensky. All these angles are playing right now, are going on. Well, we didn't need Scott Ritter to come. He has no authority more than what he did in his office when he was in there. But he comes to tell us, and he doesn't have stuff right a lot of times, so that's a danger, but I think he's a systems guy. He says time to dump Zelensky, as we heard earlier, the Congress critters are moving from that. And it's so bad right now, and because they're distracted even themselves by all that has to be done. Remember, 702 may go by the wayside, and I would think it's important that it goes by the wayside because they're distracted on other things, these Congress critters. One of these distractions is, where do we put my money to go to war? Because we're warmongers for profit. And they're a big fight about that inside, and so they're not going anywhere, which is another good thing. Again, they don't move, they don't pay money, they don't appropriate money. Maybe we're not going to go fight. That's a good thing. And we may want to encourage that. And so Scott Ritter says, oh, Zelensky got to go as the lawmakers sound the alarm over U.S. failure to admit Nazi units still fighting in Ukraine. How long have we known, people, listeners behind which, my listener behind which should, we should have known this for, what, a year and a half. Right? This is not a question, but oh, now it comes out just right now when there's this chaos going on, or purportedly so. U.S. Representative Paul Gosar has voiced concerns that the State Department continuously fails to acknowledge the neo-Nazi Azov group's ongoing presence in Ukraine's armed forces, and that it circumvents U.S. violations after changing its name to the Special Purpose Azov Regiment under the National Guard of Ukraine. Well, and then supported, fostered, and encouraged by Canada, remember? This is not going anywhere in the world, as I told you. The Nazis are throughout the world. And if you just look at it as another political movement, it's not hard to figure out how that continued. Because of there is overwhelming evidence to the contrary, this statement is at best reflects poorly on the competency of the State Department and its ethics, Gosar said. Gosar called on Blinken and his team to be replaced if they are unaware about Nazi affiliations in Ukraine. Here we go. Vote them out. Get them out. This should not be a question. And good on Gosar. Good start. But further hypocrisy as well. While the U.S. funds the Zionists to genocide here, right before they had the question, billions went to the Zionists in Israel. Another style of Nazi regime. Remember, they dealt with the Nazis. The Zionist Federation made a deal with the Nazis to use the Jewish people to, as the things they said they were going to protect, to establish the state of Israel. It's all a fraud. The warm and fuzzies, let's help people, let's help ourselves, but they weren't. And they used the Nazis to do this, and that, the National Socialists of Germany at the time. And this is against all international norms and agreements, or international law is international norms and agreements, and calling for the replacement of the entire State Department administration offers another off-ramp to the U.S. in both Israel and Ukraine, which would offer a minimally plausible way for the United States to say, oops, there's been a serious mistake. These guys here, we just removed. They done it. Let's deal. Yeah, I know. Not in this reality. But we can hope, folks. See, these off-ramps, these diplomatic off-ramps, if they set people up for fall, the scapegoats, it gives this nation the ability to move around. We just saw something this week where the president failed one of those potentials to soften the animosity, to soften the threat of war with another nation. But this is the art of statesmanship and diplomacy. We've lost it in this country. We are seeing the setup in Ukraine in the last few stories that I've talked here to be able to do that and plausibly move away from, again, the plan of death and destruction lost by the United States. It didn't have a chance, as I told you, just the first 3 days after we heard about it, when I got back on the broadcast. And it wasn't a question. None of this is really a question at some point. That we are watching the setup for the takedown of Ukraine in a way that could, if we had statesmanship in the State Department, could work to ameliorate the problem that even the United States has created on the world stage, and then also get back into a more trusting condition with other nations who are now just tossing the United States out, just don't even want to hear it, not receiving its diplomats in any quality measure at all. In fact, I heard Blinken was left a whole night by himself in Saudi Arabia, when Saudi Arabia, Prince did not want to see him early enough. So this is the slights that are going on diplomatically as well. Or looking at a global thing, remember I've mentioned the UK. UK has been mentioned in another of these stories. And in the news today, this week, we have another UK, interesting UK development. And the UK is part and parcel to this whole thing in Israel. Well, the state of Israel, relative to the anti-Semitism caused by the injection of the Zionist Federation that the Nazis helped and Britain and His Majesty put there. And Britain helped. And NAPCA, you go study NAPCA. That's an interesting, horrific story. And it's that they called that there was happening again here in Gaza today, 75 years later. One realizes one will be perpetually dealing with these psychopaths, as we see someone writing about over there in the UK. Someone just got installed, and I understand there's no election from these guys that are doing this at this point. Came or wrong, rehabilitated former UK PM is psychopath and war criminal. And I guess you can just call people names, but if you back it up, then maybe it's not just name-calling. Former British Prime Minister David Cameron's, is Cameron wrong, it's David Cameron, returned to the frontline politics as foreign secretary was immediately controversial. Geopolitical analyst, researcher, and blogger Ian Schilling said Cameron's legacy was one of corruption and war crimes. Geopolitical analyst Ian Schilling told Sputnik that Cameron was, quote, a disgusting, total corrupt traitor, mass-murdering, psychopath, and war criminal, close quote. Quote, he helped Obama and Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, all of them, Al-Qaeda, supporting terrorists in Libya to overthrow Gaddafi, and also helped them to try and overthrow Assad in Syria. Used the same Al-Qaeda-type terrorists, Schilling charge, and then they created ISIS in about 2013 to change the regime in Iraq. I don't know anything there that was an error relative to also the admitted plan by the United States of death and destruction plans through the world, that this guy in the UK was supporting all of that, and Sunak just put this guy in an office. And you have to then sit back a bit. What's the plan here? What's going on? What's really going on? Especially with the world the way it is now turning. He goes on to say here, this is the root cause of all these illegal immigrants crossing the channel into the UK and the millions of people crossing into Italy from Libya and into France, he continued. The commentator said that outside of the European Union, British foreign policy was a laughing stock, and was the U.S., as was the U.S. under President Joe Biden. Quote, what they're doing is completely contrary to national interests because they turn away third world countries, neutral countries in Africa and Asia, South America, then they then turn them away from the West and then turn them towards China, Schilling said. The billions in the rest of the world know what a farce it is, and certainly all the Arabs in the Middle East know that the UK and the US support terrorists. Again, they're not stupid. They know what Britain did for the Zionist Federation. Again, I didn't make that term up. That's what they called themselves. The Zionist Federation was given in the Balfour letters the protection and the fostering and encouraging and promotion by His Majesty to put them in Palestine. Likely because the Palestinian people weren't so organized. That's a conjecture, but we'll watch the history. Moving on here to keep reading. In another a blast from the British political past, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is reportedly considering his former British counterpart Tony Blair as his humanitarian coordinator for the besieged Palestinian enclave of the Gaza Strip once the Israeli IDF forces have finished demolishing it in their latest attempt to destroy the Hamas movement. Blair, embroiled in the UK in former U.S. President George Bush's invasions and occupations of Afghanistan and Iraq. I don't know what more to say. These people are evil. They keep coming around. They keep being put back in places. You would think that they would go away. They don't. And they're all coming in at a time that's a very serious time in the world. And none of them, as you say, they're psychopaths. they're warmongers. None of them are fit for where they're being placed, at least from a reasonable standpoint, someone who may consider that we should get to a peaceful place. No, all these folks are in it for the advantage, for the potentially the profit, certainly. Certainly the control. You don't think that the black gold over there is meaningful. If you heard it, though it kind of slipped from the news cycle, the gas that sits out off of Gaza that Israel is trying to get, the question around that. You don't think that that's part of this, a big part of this, controlling that energy still, notwithstanding carbon criminals. See, that's all the facade, too. And you start to see through all this nonsense. It's truly heinous what's going on in the world. And the people of, so far in the UK are going to allow it. I'm not sure what your mechanisms are to not allow it, but I understand that Sunak was in place because someone moved out. Now he's making a new, you know, parliamentary cabinet type stuff. He's making all these decisions. They're all not elected. And well, how did he know to bring this guy back in? How did Netanyahu want to go to Tony Blair? Of all the people in the world, go to Tony Blair. Because they're all part of this family of psychopaths. They work well together. And they continue to embarrass themselves, and the U.S. continues to embarrass itself, and likely irreparably, as we see, moving on the other side of the world now, given the turn of events in San Francisco this week. If you looked at that, very interesting. We can see yet again, it shows the uselessness here of the U.N. and its Security Council, or how it is actually a Western tool. Again, all this came out of the Second World War, and the world was subject to only a few countries at that point. U.S. stance on Gaza paralyzing U.N. Security Council, says Russia. Washington is ignoring calls to end the suffering of Palestinians, Moscow says. Well, Moscow couldn't say it, but we can see it. We don't need Moscow to tell us that. They're highlighting a problem. Paralyzing the UN Security Council, to me, is exactly what it was made to do. It's useless. I've said that already in the prior broadcast a couple weeks ago. The U.S. is using its veto power in the UN Security Council to sabotage international efforts to end the bloodshed in the Middle East despite dire warnings from the organization's own staff about the staggering civil death toll in Gaza, the Russian Foreign Ministry stated on Monday. All UN representatives have been jointly calling for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire which would end this inhumane collective punishment, the suffering of children, women, and elderly, the foreign minister declared in a statement on its website. And all those are international norm violations, high, very high violations. They're just not, it used to be you didn't even kind of even get sneak up on those. Well, unless you have a good story to tell, I suppose. Like we have the right of defense when you don't. However, the Security Council can't execute its direct mandate and remains paralyzed thanks to the position of a single country, the United States. This is why this is such a useless international non-governmental organization and why it has to be disestablished, folks. Just get rid of it. We just got to get rid of the noise. The West is using it for a disruptive, unjust tool and is designed to be. And I haven't seen much of anything good come out of it, even though when I was young, I collected their stamps. Thought it was something big, something new, you know, Peace Corps. We didn't realize it was all government agencies to take down other governments. It's designed as a tool, and it's all the facets of a war against life and political control, such as climate change. And I'll throw that in there. You put that together for yourself. Why would I be able to go there? All this stuff comes out of that tool. It's all done for death, destruction, and profit. And the United States has the controlling hand in it. And in this case, that's not a good thing the way it's been going. We could have done it right. And we aren't. And that's, again, an internal reflection on us. And we see that, again, moral decay and hypocrisy and the lack of representative government by the leaders, so-called. In this last thing that happened here this week was Xi in San Francisco. Xi Jinping credited with San Francisco homeless cleanup. What an embarrassment. What a climate change we saw there, folks. Did you see the communist in chief in California, the Californication, what he did at the command of that Chinese leader almost overnight? Yeah, lots of people took notice of that. And that's going to be an ongoing stain on us, I suppose, I hope. But yeah, as Xi credited with San Francisco homeless cleanup, a visit from the Chinese leader has spurred the Democrat-controlled city to deal with the issue. An upcoming visit, again, this is written before, this is where the setup is for the next issue. The upcoming visit by Chinese President Xi Jinping to San Francisco has, according to critics, forced the Democrat-led local government to clean house and finally act against the city's notorious homelessness levels. All it took was a communist to come to town for San Francisco to get their act together, journalist Colin Roog of the Trending Politics outlet said on X, sharing a video of a security fence erected for the event. Talk about open-air prison. You're watching it right there. 15-minute city? Maybe so. Political commentator Jackson Hinkle posted a before and after comparison photo for the same location, remarking, "Patriots love President Xi." City officials said that they had used existing funds to improve the visuals and claimed they wanted to keep the streets clean after the APEC guests leave. Quote, "It's like they're trying to throw away human beings," a 63-year-old man, told the newspaper after explaining that he fears being separated from his wife in a shelter. And this, I think, story is pretty clear. The communist leader came and they cleaned up their act. Why? Why didn't they do it before? They're not working for the people. Noisom Newsom's come out and essentially said, no, we did it for that, not for you. And so you get the guys you keep in office. Voters, time to get him out. Force him to resign. Do something. Get rid of this nonsense. This is the reflection of us. This is a moral decay that shouldn't even be tolerated in a moment. And Biden here didn't do himself any favors in all this either when they did meet. When asked in a recent, in a press conference after this meeting, this is a big deal meeting, folks. This is like you're watching the shift of the baton here. When asked if he still considered Xi the president here of China, the president of a major nuclear power, a dictator, Biden said yes. And if you saw the video, hope you find the video, you see the one where they're showing Blinken, you should have seen the look on Blinken's face. Yeah, as I've been saying, diplomacy and statesmanship is out the window. You watched in this thing in San Francisco, you watched the global baton passing to China. Yes, they're not economically out of the woods, but they are a major force to be reckoned with. You're watching them do what Russia did. They're coming out as a phoenix out of the ashes. You watch. I don't know what's out there to shut this whole down or shut them out, but it may not be possible. A momentum, a mass moving is very difficult to stop. The best you could probably do is deflect it, but you're not going to stop it. And they took advantage of everything that the United States gave them over the last couple decades. They prepared. And as I said, there's a global bank system behind the scenes. So it all goes to that. But what we're watching is influence in the world. The United States is losing it. And Biden is helping that. And I think Blinken's view, the look on his face, tells us exactly what I've been saying. He lost an opportunity to not try to stab Xi Jinping. He tried to stab him again. So we got to, to me it's dangerous. I'm glad to hear a bit of what Xi Jinping said. They really don't want to fight us. They don't want to do any of that. But they're not going to back down, like Russia. They don't want to fight. Nobody wants to fight. They really don't. But they're not, they got their plans, and they're going to execute them. And they have a tact that's a lot more diplomatic than the U.S. has become. All the United States government has, again, is death and destruction. It's war. It's all because of the economic, it looks like because of the economic condition that the United States is now in. That's all the United States has as a tool in its bag. War. while Xi Jinping is talking peace. And I can tell you, just looking in the world, people would rather go toward peace, just even in the use of words, even knowing that maybe they're dealing with a snake, well, maybe a dragon at this time. But Biden did not represent the United States at all. He had the ability to ameliorate a condition, step back without losing face. And he chose to try and lunge and stab Xi one more time. And we see in the news that there's no American influence. We see this in a story that happened right before. What? This is just a diplomatic disgrace. Biden to press Xi on Iran in APEC meeting next week. Joe Biden will urge Xi Jinping to use his influence, to use Xi Jinping's influence with Tehran to prevent Iran and its proxies from exploiting the Israel-Hamas war to sow a wider regional conflict. This is such a diplomatic disgrace, I almost had my mouth dropped. Biden went to the Xi Jinping, who has influence. The United States has none. Doesn't have a say in everything. To tell Xi to try and get influence over Iran to stop something the United States created. Probably is not going to fly so well. And the world is looking on. But we see right here that there is no influence. America has no more. It's lost its position of influence. I'm saying that the baton is passing. We saw it in that meeting. The United States is absolutely inept anymore, absolutely out of their field with the people that are running in the administration right now. But not to let a crisis go to waste, let's cast more threats and insults. America is next if Israel loses the war, says Netanyahu, insisting that, quote, our right is your fight. Our fight is your fight, he says. He went on to allege that the axis of terror exists between Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and the Houthis in Yemen, and the Iranian government claiming Tehran's minions seek to bring the Middle East and the world back to the Dark Ages. I told you last week that Netanyahu is a psychopath, but neither here nor there. People will continue to listen to him. Sounds like as many people that got jab harm agree to him, and I don't understand how that worked. Maybe they're coincidental. America was done for after 9/11. I mean, this is where it starts to fall. I don't know how the U.S. military decided that would be a good thing, but we also know that the Zionists were involved in that, and lots of Zionists got paid handsomely through insurance deals and maybe fraud, if it would ever be found out. But America was done for at 9/11, and all the people of the United States agree. So I don't know where we go more than that. We are still suffering from that. But this Netanyahu is using us, the broken crutch. And this is what they go on. They start to tell you that if you don't support them, we're going to live in the Dark Ages. Folks, we're going to be living in the Dark Ages. I don't know what more to actually say. We're allowing them to bring us into the dark. The country of bounty is being brought into the Dark Ages. What do you think the digital gulag is going to be about? What about austerity, the sustainability? And you've proven that you're not able to defend yourself from those living in the Dark Ages. People in caves, folks? Look at what's going on in the Middle East. These are not, we can call them goat herders. They're not stupid people. They're not people without their own will for their own existence. There's a lot of them, too. It's a land over there the Zionista Federation invaded with the help of His Majesty and others of the world. A victory here for the Israelis is a victory for oppression by an occupying power. Start putting all that together. Don't listen to them. Don't start looking at the facts. And that's a matter of international norms. And this is by reason, time out of mind, about these occupying power problems. I spoke about this last week. but people generally don't appear interested. And I got a very low response from last week's broadcast. They're not people that just generally don't want to look at this. They'd rather support a terrorist, the occupant. Nothing's been done right, and the whole world was involved in it, is an interesting problem. That's why it's interesting. I noticed that, of course, all the talking that's going on in the Middle East by all the nations there and all the leaders, they're not really jumping in either. This is a serious problem for everybody. Netanyahu uses this broken crutch called us. He tries to bring us, the United States, U.S., into it. And they're not together. And yet people will agree that they have some kind of a stand, that they have something to protect. And I've already laid out in prior broadcasts what I think should have been done. It's not going to happen, but I'm going to lay it out anyway to show you that there's a peaceful way to do that. There's a peaceful way to integrate them, the people that may have had a right, and they could have proved it. Not kill people, but kill everybody. What kind of, and we look at that, what kind of is Netanyahu? What kind of special psychopath kills children en masse and in an indiscriminate way, then denies killing children en masse and in an indiscriminate way? I don't know where we go from there. This guy is a nut. And he's got a world full of people supporting him. And there's a lot of people that are not. My point is, he is left into a position to be able to do this. And we shouldn't, as a mankind should not allow this kind of thing to rise up. Netanyahu rejects Trudeau's claim Israel kills children. Now, I don't know about you. Maybe it's all just Photoshop. But I've seen gobs and gobs and gobs of children dead. Babies. In swaddling clothes. So when I see this guy saying he doesn't kill children, we're dealing with another liar. At least. In the very least. Prime Minister has fired back after his Canadian counterpart urged the country to adhere to the rules of war in Gaza. Netanyahu has responded to a speech given by Trudeau on Tuesday in which he stated that the price of justice cannot be the continued suffering of all Palestinian civilians. Even war has rules, the Canadian Prime Minister went on, urging the Israeli government to exercise maximum restraint. The world is witnessing this killing of women and children, of babies. This has to stop. And to that part, I have to agree. There's no sense of any of it to be doing. But we want Trudeau himself, who must know about killers of women and children, being he promoted the warp speed jab, to be reminded his war against the people of Kanukistan must stop as well. These are all the same types of minds. How they get in these places to decide for other people is amazing. Yeah, but we're a peaceful people, I suppose, even to our demise. But Netanyahu will not be outdone on all this. He's going to now attack another hospital. And he promises us a Hamas will be there, as any story in any port in a storm, to try and extend this any more days. And again, this is a shameful position as well for the Middle East countries. Every day, more and more children, almost half of everyone that dies is a child, a baby over there. They are watching the demise of a people. And so they're handling, sitting back and doing nothing is also some kind of it's an aiding and abetting as well. Bunker debunker. Did Israel build subterranean fortress under Gaza's biggest hospital, the one they just claimed to have invaded to go find Hamas? Starting out as an army barracks during the British mandate of Palestine-era El Shifa, it was turned into a hospital in 1946 during the closing years of Britain's occupation and expanded into the entire complex of medical facilities during Egypt's administration of Gaza between 1953 and 1967. Israel preserved and then expanded the hospital complex, and in the 1980s, the United States' financial backing gave it a major overhaul. So in that little paragraph, I read that because that gives you the history of who's been involved and what we might be there for and why. Just what I've been telling you. It's not such a clear statement, oh, it's about Hamas. No, it's not. Along with the medical facilities, the project reportedly saw the construction of a secure underground operating room and a tunnel network underneath the hospital's building number 2, in 1983, and with a large underground concrete floor constructed underneath the facility during the same period. Other reports indicated the hardened underground facilities were used to house the hospital's laundry and, quote, various administrative offices. As for the potential use of the underground facilities by Hamas after Israel's withdrawal from Gaza in 2005 and 2009 report of Interet, citing Palestinian sources, indicated that the militant group's leaders never hide in one place, but spread out and constantly change locations using an elaborate network of tunnels. In other words, they wouldn't sit there in that one place, even if there was availability. Quote, when it comes to the issue of the bunker of the tunnel or the tunnels underneath the Shifa Hospital, I think one of the reasons that Israel is asserting this is because every time it has tried to make an assertion regarding Hamas operations, those assertions have consistently been debunked. Sami Hamdi, political analyst and head of international interests, a UK-based global risk and intelligence company, said, the IDF will undoubtedly hope to find evidence of Hamas under the underground facilities and tunnels, while in the 1980s as evidence to support its narrative about the Palestinian militant group's use of civilian infrastructure and non-combatants as human shields, but it remains to be seen whether Tel Aviv can actually sway public opinion in this manner, the political analyst believes. The point being, I think that when it comes to the Israeli pushing this narrative, it has less to do with the idea that Israel actually believes it and more about a desperate attempt to try to win back public opinion that it has emphatically lost as a result of the bombardment of social media videos showing the realities of the atrocities that are being committed in Gaza, Hamdi said. Mehmet Makipoglu, a researcher at Dimensions for Strategic Studies, a London-based think tank, pointed to the irony of the IDF accusing Hamas of using bunkers and tunnels underneath Gaza's civilian infrastructure when Israel itself appears to have built the secret shelter under the Shifa Hospital in the first place. It is obvious that Hamas did not use the hospital as a shield. Even though Israel tries to manipulate public opinion with amateur videos, the truth is clear, Rakpipoglu told Sputnik. So far, the places that Israel claims to be used by Hamas terrorist cells and as tunnels are spare water tanks, the observer said, referring to social media posts mocking IDF's proof of allegedly militant tunnel networks in civilian areas, which turn out to be mere water containers, heaters, and septic tanks. And if you look on this, and what little bit I've had time to go look at it, Netanyahu has not produced any evidence but a couple of amateurist propaganda pieces. Not Hamas headquarters with gobs and bunches of Hamas fighters. These people that are running this government are madmen. Just madmen. They haven't done a thing that more than just to try and build support for something that doesn't exist, and they're doing absolutely heinously and wrong. And these are madmen, folks, with nukes, as we move into this next story, and I don't have a proof of this, but it is a story, and it's important about what might be going on that we are not being told. There's no independent corroboration yet, but this is a noteworthy story. The U.S. troops dispatched to secure Israel's top security nuclear facilities. U.S. troops have reportedly been dispatched to help secure Israel's highly sensitive nuclear facilities, including the top-secret site at Dimona, the alleged birthplace of the Israeli suspected nuclear arsenal. Sources speaking to an independent online Arabic language newspaper indicated that the U.S. told a Lebanese intelligence intermediary that American troops would not participate in field operations in the Gaza Strip under any circumstances, but rather be deployed to secure and protect two now Israeli research reactors, the Negev Nuclear Research Center near the city of Dimona, and a second facility in the desert near the locality of Yavni in central Israel. Now, if this is true, it also means the United States allowed a recalcitrant nuclear-occupying power to evade nuclear regulatory oversight, imperiling the entire world. And so, again, be careful too far we run. If this is true, we've got some serious considerations to be doing. Again, we got madmen, psychopaths. It looks like there's some temper going on in the United States. They really don't want this to blow up. but they're pushing on a, they're leaning on a cherry red button that the Muslims are going to decide. And they're getting close. I don't know if you've heard about Turkey stepping up. They're still talking, but Turkey has now come in, and this is a NATO member now, making talk to Israel, and not, and they don't care whether or not there's nuclear powers, and Turkey is one of the top four or so military powers there. So this could turn into a serious problem when madmen are on the nuclear switch and other people really don't care anymore. And a global finance, all the disasters, a global finance disaster which might one day nuke your life, the world's largest bank by deposits, the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, suffered a cyber attack that reportedly disrupted U.S. Treasury trades this week, forcing the firm to use USB stick to complete the settlements. The ICBC revealed on Thursday that its U.S. Financial Services Unit had experienced a ransomware attack that resulted in the disruption of several systems. This is a true shock to large banks around the world, said Marcus Murray, founder of the Swedish cybersecurity firm Trusec. The ICBC hack will make large banks around the globe race to improve their defenses starting today. Oh, they didn't start 10 years ago when we were told about it. And an update on that. Who is in your wallet, folks? Hackers claim the world's largest bank paid the ransom over cyber attack. The Industrial and Commercial Bank of China paid a ransom after it suffered a cyber attack against some of its U.S.-based systems last week. Lockbit, the hacking group behind the attack, claimed on Monday, according to media reports. The breach of the country's largest global leader by total assets, which is disclosed on November 9th, disrupted the U.S. Treasury market deals from clearing, forcing brokers and traders to reroute transactions. They paid a ransom, deal closed, the representative told the outlet via an online message app called Talks. I'm glad to hear that come up. Not many people seem to know about that one, but the talk is kind of interesting. Another peer-to-peer type thing, a little more private. The extent of the ICBC cyber attack was so severe that even a corporate email system stopped functioning, prompting employees to use Google Mail, according to the outlet. Financial Services Information Sharing Analysis Center and Financial Industry Cybersecurity Group urged companies to, quote, stay current on all protective measures and patch critical vulnerabilities immediately. Ransomware remains one of the top threat vectors facing the financial sector, the group's spokesperson warned. Folks, I've said over and over again, this is going to be your digital gulag life. There's no way to stay current on all protective measures and patch critical vulnerabilities immediately. At all. I've talked about the hardware problem. We have zero day defects and vulnerabilities that the system managed software people aren't going to fix. They don't. They let them go. In digital systems, especially when vulnerabilities are baked into the hardware itself, you have no protection on that. I've read all this and exposed this in past casts. This is the future they want for you. Vulnerability, hardship, and austerity. And unlike using a gold and silver metals alternative would be that thing they can't address like this, and you supplement with the digital if you must, but don't rely upon it and don't allow anyone to coerce the use of digital gulag in the terrorist economy on you. This is a critical insight of what's going on and the vulnerabilities that are built into these systems. They can't be fixed. Don't let these people get you into the future they want to control. Listen to all the third-party intermediaries involved in the U.S. Treasury movement of that market. Every point is a point of breakage. A terrorist economy. Washington is prepared to create a new financial disaster for the whole world. We're seeing a little of the glimpse of it there. I've been telling you about all of this. The U.S. Treasury market, essentially essential to the functioning of the global financial system, doesn't seem to be working. I said the global financial system is there existing, and it is where all this is going, even with the BRICS. We talked about it in the last month or two ago. The once taken for granted pillars of eternal truth are looking awfully shaky. The tectonic plates of the U.S.-led global financial system have been rustling ever more frequently in recent years, but the quivers are now coming more frequently. At the heart of this increasingly brittle and dysfunctional system is the U.S. Treasury market. So there you go. I told you the U.S. system is in the background, is sitting in the global banking system, which BRICS is going to be a part of. There's no multipolarity, ultimately. And now they're talking about the quaking and the shaking. Why? Because they want to cause panic and cause this action to start happening that ultimately gets brought back together. The chaos, the control and the chaos. So notice here, there's no multipolarity, as I discussed, and it's stated here that the Treasury, the U.S. Treasury market is essential to the functioning of the global financial system. But remember, this global financial system is in transformation right now to bring parity to all nations, that no nation of people be left behind. The new ordered world of the banker's digital panopticon, as I've read to you, my listener, before. It's all there for us to see. We need to have a response to this, and it's going to have to be an alternative and separate, inseparable. And all of, as that's going on, U.S. credit rating itself downgraded to negative Moody's sites, this deficits, and political polarization as a key reason for the move. International credit rating agency Moody's has changed its outlook on the U.S. from stable to negative, citing a massive fiscal deficit and a notable decline in debt affordability as major reasons for the move on Friday. And this is the thing about the debt being created by Congress. That's where the answer is, and they need to stop it. And they're not going to, probably. And that's where the money men, like the Fed, can come in with their interest rates, and that's where they make the theft, right there. And then they get you to believe that whatever percentage is okay, it's good enough for the theft you get to give them. And you're okay with that. The downgrade follows a similar announcement by the fellow credit rating agency Fitch, which raised concerns over the state of U.S. finances and the national debt burden when lowering its rating from the country earlier this year. And so, and why is the political polarization important? We can read here on the article, continued political polarization within U.S. Congress raises the risks that successive governments will not be able to reach consensus on a fiscal plan to slow the decline of debt affordability. Oh, so we see it interferes with the bankers hiding its plunder, the debt servicing. Oh, a form of prostitution here, isn't it, folks? Yeah, I think we just need a fiscal and monetary anti-John law, don't we? So we see it all right there, what should happen, how to stop it, who's involved, who the players are, and that your life is subject to all of it on a global level. It's amazing how they pulled this together. And so what about the private economy of my listener? Are those in the future taught by FUAI, the schools of teachers becoming guides, as we talked about last week, toward a preordained sustainable academic goal? Well, we're going to read here in this story what happens to your private economy, and you won't have one. Like, you found out your car may not be private to you, and none of your expression is private either. That's all of the automakers. Moreover, here we'll see children are a human resource and human capital, as we read. Broken by design, why the elites want everything and everyone to have an expiration date. By Dr. Matthew Mahavak, who researches systems sciences, global risk, geopolitics, strategic foresight, governance, and artificial intelligence. He writes, the Greek philosopher Socrates had this to say about the use of this day at circa 470 BC. Quote, children, they have bad manners, contempt for authority, they show disrespect for elders, and love chatter in place of exercise. They no longer rise when elders enter the room. They contradict their parents and tyrannize their teachers. Children are now tyrants. I think there's a lot of adults are now children who are now tyrants. But juvenile absolutists can indeed become thorns in the societal flesh. Think of the routine theatrics of the young Scandinavian environmentalist, in quotes, who is on a mission to save humanity, hobnobbing with leaders who wage eco-friendly wars seems to be part of the salvation process. The prophet Isaiah, who preceded Socrates by three centuries, summed up this absurdity very well, Isaiah 3:12. My people, children, are their oppressors, women rule over them. O my people, your guides mislead you, and they have swallowed up the course of your paths. Again, I mentioned teachers being turned into guides in the FUAI schools. Fully promoting their academic goal of the long-suffering technocrats and their technocratic movement. The academic goals are not the goals for this, for the little one. They're the goals of the academic that are pushing the little one in through inculcation. And we read on here on this article, product regression was part of the plan first articulated in 1932 by the American real estate broker Bernard London. In a paper titled Ending the Depression Through Planned Obsolescence, London began his pro-corporate spiel by paraphrasing the notorious Thomas Malthus, who is a 1798 foresaw a future Hobson's choice between population growth and food production. London's paper was published at the height of the Great Depression when the vast majority of the consumers had lost their spending power. As a result, the shelf lives of consumer items were being extended via ingenious means. London, however, viewed that as a cardinal obstacle to progress. In his rather meandering tract, London complained that the people everywhere are today disobeying the laws of obsolescence. They are using their old cars, their old tires, their old radios, and their old clothing much longer than statisticians have expected on the basis of earlier experience. Quality surplus products, including buffer food stocks in granaries, were making, quote, the new production unattractive and unprofitable. He omitted to mention that the population surge in the 1930s would have solved this imbalance if not for the mass impoverishment caused by runaway Wall Street greed. Just when did the production of durable products become a socioeconomic problem? We see this sinister logic being repeated nearly in a century later under different pretexts. The European Union and Britain, for example, have pledged to ban new diesel and petrol cars from 2035. This climate-linked policy has also resulted in senseless campaigns against livestock and vegetation. Bernard London's solution has also appeared to foresaw a great reset. Quote, I would have the government assign a lease of life to shoes and homes and machines, to all products of manufacture, mining, and agriculture when they are first created, and they should be sold and used within the term of their existence definitely known by consumer. After the allotted time had expired, these things would be legally dead and would be controlled by the duly appointed governmental agency and destroyed if there is a widespread unemployment. New products would be constantly pouring forth from factories and marketplaces to take place obsolete, and the wheels of industry would be kept going and employment regularized and assured for the masses. And he goes on, it gets worse. And these are these technocrats coming along to run your life. And he goes at the end here, welcome to the new world, new normal, the World Economic Forum, one which effectively plots and determines the course of your paths as foretold by Isaiah. I thought that was a very interesting article. You can read a whole lot more to it. And how that integrates and how long mankind has been suffering this very same thing and how people profit from it and how their psychopaths would prefer death and destruction. And it's up to you to stop that in them. I hope something today I said is enlightening to you, puts you on some path to that you favor to go ahead and advance for you. And so you, if there's a trouble coming on, you can also see it coming and step off out the way. And until next time, tech diffs, for nature willing, we'll see you then.
Another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
A can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.